In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Mike and I have Chase Reeves on the show, and we talk about how your product is not the hero of the story. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 175. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. So where this week, Mike?
I've been going through spreadsheets and analytics and all sorts of stuff over the past week and kind of analyzing my conversion funnel for people who are coming into the Audit Shark site and kind of looking to see how many people are doing that versus going to the pricing page and then following through with a trial for the software. And I think I found part of the problem, or at least what I believe is the problem. I think that there's a big disconnect between why people end up on the Audit Shark website, because I basically targeted all these keywords around compliance, but then when you get there, product and the copy talks a lot about security, not necessarily compliance. So I think that there's a very big disconnect there where people are looking at that and saying, oh, well, this page maybe applies to me, but you know, the product doesn't necessarily do so. Those are things that I'm looking at right now and trying to address in the copy, and I'm basically rewriting a bunch of the different pages that are out there. I guess focus the marketing a little bit more.
Right, and that's something, actually, in this episode, we interview Chase Reeves, and we talk about that, about how hard it is to get that language right and to talk about your product in a consistent way. You have like a single voice and a single tone, and even you're still going after that consistent single message. I'm doing the same with Drip. I don't have a consistent message because I'm still trying to figure out the way that resonates with the largest block of folks who are coming to look at it. So feel your pain in that respect.
How about you? What are you up to?
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about the latest speaker we signed up for MicroConf. I'm super stoked. Her name is Annie Cushing. We're lucky to have her. She's speaking at MozCon this year, and she is just an analytics guru. And this is what she does 24/7, is think about and act on and consult on and talk about analytics. So her talk is about secrets you can pull from Google Analytics. And she told me a few of the secrets, and they'll be on the speaker page in a few days because it's in her going to be in her abstract. But there's some crazy stuff that you can pull out of there. I had no idea. I mean, I consider myself like an intermediate to lower advanced Google Analytics user, but there's no chance. Like, compared to her, she just was throwing out all this crazy stuff. So I'm excited to hear about it, and I think there's going to be a lot of value there. And then the other thing for me is, I talked a little last week about how, you know, the previous month or maybe 2 months, I was kind of in a slump. And what's crazy is how quickly that's turned around for me. I got the Hittail revamp live, so that Hittail is, you know, once again providing all the value it used to. It's importing keywords for people directly from Google Webmaster Tools and providing suggestions. And within like 48 hours of that, as new customers started coming in and I've started sending emails to the lists that are affiliated with Hittail, people, you know, on the marketing lists and trial users, and just kind of getting the onboarding all reworked, my motivation has gone through the roof. And so I'm at that high again, like manically rushing and helping and implementing new pieces of the support queue and new pieces of onboarding and everything. But it feels great. And I'm like thinking about it at night, and I'm waking up every morning like stoked to work on the project, which is like the antithesis of where I was like 2 or 3 weeks ago. So it feels good to have kind of made it past that dip and back up into the, you know, into the place where I'm just excited to be doing what I'm doing again.
Very cool.
So today, Mike and I did an interview with Chase Reeves. We don't do a lot of interviews, but I wanted to bring him on the show because he just has such unique thoughts about how design impacts every aspect of your product. And he made this great quote during the talk that I used as the title, and it's that your product is not the hero of the story. And so I think he brings a unique insight. You know, on our podcast, it tends to be pretty left brain. Like, Mike and I think about things in engineering terms. We talk a lot about analytics and split testing and stuff. Chase is the exact opposite. He's super creative, super smart. He's just executing on this whole idea of how creativity and brand and tone can really build a business. And so I wanted to bring him on as, you know, both just to hear his thoughts on it, but also to expose our listeners to different points of view that may not necessarily be the way that you're thinking about it, especially if you're kind of the engineering mindset. So today, Mike and I are chatting with Chase Reeves. I first heard about Chase on The Fizzle Show, which is a solid podcast you should go check out. It's about online marketing and starting an online business. And Chase also works with Corbett Barr and Caleb Wojcik on Fizzle.co, which is like an online membership website for learning how to launch an online business. What I like about Fizzle, both the show and Fizzle.co, Fizzle is one that I consider to be exceptional.
Oh, thanks, Rob.
And I'm really glad you gave me a login so I could actually verify that before I said that on the show. But my impression of it was always that it was solid. It was the same thing with, you know, Copyblogger, Brian Clark. Everything they do, I respect. And everything that Corbett has done, because I followed him for a few years on Think Traffic, I've always respected. So when I heard he and you and Caleb talking on the podcast, I'm like, man, these guys are doing it up legit. And that's really why we wanted to have you on the show. So thanks for coming, man.
Thank you guys for having me. I'm thrilled to be here. I'm a fan. I feel like you guys, and then also my friend Justin Jackson, have kind of introduced me to this whole world of this in-betweener world, because my background's sort of in between one's like being a blogger, and then the other is like looking at the big startup world. I've always kind of shimmied between those two worlds, things that are on This Week in Startups, like those companies and working in startups, and then like, oh, look at my little father apprentice blog, my little blogs that I start up and like try to build an audience, right? And then I see this bootstrapper crew kind of develop over the last few years, right in the middle of it. And it really kind of feels like the home base I never had. And I'm just in the last year, I've gotten so inspired and interested in everything. And, you know, I've always, as a designer, I've always been looking at 37 Signals. So I've heard the term bootstrappers. I know about bootstrapped, profitable, and proud. I know, but that was always still like a This Week in Startups crowd thing for me.
Right.
And so being able to see the way that you guys have started talking about this sort of world and the products that you make and all that kind of stuff, in principle, like I spent a whole like 2 weeks in the MicroConf videos from the most recent session. I basically cancel all my calls, Judith. And I just spent forever watching through each one of those videos and I just loved them. I felt like I was finding my people. So I'm really excited to be here.
Awesome. There's a really cool term. There's a blog post called The Third Tribe. It was written on Copyblogger, and it talks about that false dichotomy that you were just talking about, where there's like kind of the startup people over here, and they're all trying to launch these huge B2C funded businesses that never work, that 1 in 1,000 actually makes money, or 1 in 100. And then on the other side, there were the internet marketers, the affiliate marketers, who are just all about money, 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 conversions, not really forwarding society. And on Copyblogger, they said there's this third tribe, and it's the people who want to do stuff legitimately online, whether that is starting a blog and building up a real audience, or whether that's launching a small software product. But they also kind of need to make money because we're bootstrapped, we're self-funded, right? You can't just go for 3 years and give away your product. So if you haven't read that, I'd recommend it. We'll link it up in the show notes.
Here's my question for you guys. What are a handful of entrepreneurs that you guys are paying attention to?
I listen to the Bootstrap with Kids podcast pretty much every week whenever they come up with new episodes. So I pay attention to Breck and Scott, pay attention to the things that Ruben Gomez is doing, and then I also pay attention to pretty much anything that Patrick McKenzie does. And then there's kind of a core of, I don't know, I'd probably say 30 or 40 people who I kind of keep tabs on, but I don't necessarily follow absolutely every move that they make, but they tend to be the people who show up at MicroConf. Just people like Robert Graham, you know, Nathan Barry and Brennan Dunn and various other people who have been to MicroConf, have seen what it's like, and, you know, are doing things on their own, but aren't necessarily high profile people. They're people who are in the industry, as Rob was saying, kind of that third tribe.
Are you looking for who we look up to or just who we're in community with?
I guess a little bit of both.
Yeah, I mean, all the folks Mike mentioned, I'd add several other MicroConf attendees, Dave Rodenbaugh and Patrick Thompson from Inkstone Software, just folks who are making it happen, but don't necessarily have the big blog and the big following.
Yeah,
the entrepreneurs that I've been following the last several years who are really rocking it, and I tend to use them in a lot of examples because I respect the hell out of what they've done in both the bootstrapped and the venture space, is Jason Cohen and Heaton Shaw.
Okay.
And that's one of the reasons those guys have been at every MicroConf, because they just kill it. Anything they do, if they moved into the email marketing space, I would be so sad, right? Because one of my apps is in that space. I mean, they're the few people, like if a venture-funded company moves into my space, I'm not actually that scared. I think I can kick their ass just based on pure will and just experience. But those are the guys who have it. They have both the knowledge and they can have funding at the drop of a hat and all that stuff.
Yeah. Jason's video of in the most recent MicroConf, there was a point in his presentation where he said, you know, okay, so hands up if in the next month, if you didn't do anything on your business, it would still make at least $10,000. And that question and realizing that if I was in the audience, I would have my hands raised. Mm-hmm. It was the actual moment I became a big boy in my business because I never had put it together like that before up until that, like that point. Like we, Fizzle, like you said, I'm really enamored by the fact that you would say such kind things about it since you're someone that I respect. We worked our off to make this thing. Mm-hmm. I'm really, really proud of it. And yet I still wasn't in that mode where like, look at this thing I made. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. I was still just in like, oh yeah, we've got a little thing. We'll see if it's going to be okay. In my crew of designers, like it's not cool to talk about your successes. That had bled out into like, it's not cool to feel confident about what you've made in some ways. And so when Jason said that, like the diaper came off. I'm still in pull-ups, but it's not a diaper and I can do it myself now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely think that the thing that the press reinforces, kind of this societal vision of entrepreneurship, is from Shark Tank and Inc. Magazine and Fast Company and all that stuff. And that's one thing that we've tried to fight against and mention it often on the podcast, is it's like, that's kind of the fake reality. That's the fake entrepreneurship, in my opinion. Not saying that those guys aren't doing it, because there are people on there that are doing it. But if you have to ask for someone's permission to start your company, I think you're doing it wrong.
Sure.
You know?
So there are some businesses that just can't be bootstrapped, right? If you want to start a new airline, like it's going to be hard just, you know, try to roll your own in that way. And I've got a buddy up in Canada who does a lot of big business, and he's always giving me for that. And he's like, Chase, sometimes there are businesses where the idea itself, in order for that idea to succeed, it can't be done on a bootstrap level, just because I'm so one-sided about that. So I've learned a little bit from him in that capacity, just because, I mean, to be able to be nimble and quick and live like we are, it's sexy, it's a creative, it's adventurous, it feels exciting. I really, really enjoy what it's like to build businesses like these.
Yep, and we do too. That's why we're here. I kind of want to guide us into the topic of today. And what was cool is when, Chase, you and I were emailing about it and you sent back, I said, hey, would you like to come on the show? What would you like to talk about? And this was your exact quote. You said, my honest to God wheelhouse is design, specifically how founders should be thinking about design, not conversion optimization or A/B testing. That's for people with spreadsheets and I don't have those. Mm-hmm. I'm the creative director for Fizzle and that runs through a ton of writing, voice, tone, strategy, long-term brand strategy, story, etc. I lump all those in with design. And then you tacked on the end, you said, I also do a lot of teaching on defining audience and customer development. And so that's really what I want to dig into, is both of those things, because I think they're critically important to founders, both bootstrapped and funded. Yeah. And I think both starting a blog audience, just an online business that way, or a software company, I think we can dig into why those things are important. So that's what I want to kick it off, is like, you mentioned voice, tone, and strategy. So why should a software founder care about those when they're launching a software product?
Well, there is definitely a cultural momentum around design. I guess the aesthetics of a thing, the way it feels in your hand, the message that it gives, the sense of cool or independent. You know, like look at the difference between an Apple and an Android. Right? Android is like, I want to be able to put my own apps on my thing. I don't want to be in the walled garden, so to speak. And Apple's like, we control everything. And that's why it's so good, isn't it? It's never really been a satisfying answer to me. I think, like I kind of said in the quote you read, design ends up being like the whole kit and caboodle. It's like design itself, it's weird because the design isn't the thing. Like design is nothing. The design is a container. So you never would give someone like a piece of Tupperware and be like, look, isn't it amazing? Like, you know what, he's ever said that about Tupperware ever, right? But I think design is like Tupperware, but what's inside of the Tupperware, you know, the leftover meatloaf that's just sensational, it got better overnight. That's the content, that's the business goal in some ways. And the whole purpose of design is first and foremost to get out of the way of the business, and then if possible to amplify the sort of message of the business. And what I mean by that is when you land on a site and you're like, this is good, I like this, you're resonating with that thing, like you like it, it's speaking your language, you feel like it came from people like you, or you're one of the kinds of people who would pick this thing up or who would come across this website or who this thing was built for. Because I think of an intention that the designer or CEO or founder or whoever had to create that experience with you. So like there's an audience, we have pains, we have problems, we're bored, we're irritated, we have things we want to achieve, things we want to do. I have a rash on my rectal and I need a cream. And then I do a search for a cream and I land on four sites, and these four sites could very clearly cater to very different audiences. And it's that point, the catering to different audiences, that's when I get really excited.
sounds to me more like a lot of the way you view it is not necessarily what I would term design. It sounds to me more like it's about giving your company or your product a voice and a persona that resonate with other people. Because, you know, people who follow 37 signals tend to see things in a certain way. People who follow Microsoft tend to see things in a certain way. I think that that's reflected in the choices that they choose, but also in kind of the positioning of those companies and the products that they represent.
Yeah, very much so. That isn't just design, but also you can't separate design from the voice of. So like, I kind of see three things. Like, there's the aesthetics, there's the voice. So the aesthetics is like, what color is it? And like, just the general sort of the look and feel of it. Then there's the voice, the way in which the thing was written, the tone. And then there's the actual content, like the thing that it's actually about. So I could write something about freeing slaves in a sort of happy-go-lucky way, or in like a super broody, serious, like, this just has to change way. And then the way, the kind of page that I'm reading that on, what type it's set in, how big the margins are, what the colors are, where I found this thing. Is it pasted up against a telephone pole? Is it a website that I was searching for something else and found this? Was it an advertisement on Facebook? All of these things create this moment. My whole dream has always been to sort of like engage the visitor in a moment of emotional authenticity. I want them to land here and be like, oh my God, yes, this is for me. Because it's so incredibly hard to do that, right? There's so much noise. There's so much cruft and crap on the internet that to try to reach through all this crap, even though they have, like, any visitor that lands on your site is so well trained to hit the back button, right? We come to sites with that posture. My dream, the challenge that I sort of, that I've always loved is to, how do I reach through that crap and that history that they have with websites and with salesmen and the, all these sorts of things and create sort of an emotionally authentic moment where they're like, oh my God, I like these people. I like this person. I like this thing. This feels like it's for me. I'm learning, I'm starting to trust this. Because that's the other big thing about design is it creates trust. I think it's getting harder and harder to do so. But if I land on your site and it's a typical WordPress theme and your copy's all about some big deal, look at this thing I found out, incredible, yada, 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 I'm just not interested, chances are. Unless you really, really, really nail it. And I think the copy is absolutely the most important thing on the site. And I want to make sure that I definitely say that. Just like Justin Jackson's words thing. I did a course within Fizzle on the essentials of web design for business builders. So not for designers, but for like people who are building businesses. It's the essentials, and it's like 5 hours of training. It's crazy. And then we designed Nerd Fitness, and it, while I was doing it, and I filmed most of the conversations that me and Steve Kam, the founder of that site, has. I brought in Justin Jackson's words thing. I remember I'd never talked to him before. I just found the thing, and I was like, hey, can I use this? I'd already made the video. I hope that's okay. and then I put it out, and luckily he was fine with it. But because that's so powerful, the idea of this is, it's really about words. It really is about words, and words are the things that communicate. And if you can tell me about my problem better than I can tell myself about my problem, then I'm already trusting you. I'm already interested in the solution that you have to offer. And I think that's still the most powerful thing. But now, why stop there? Like, why make it a black text on a white background when you can make the aesthetics of the page completely get that message across?
I'm totally on board with that. I have my own thoughts of how to accomplish that. I'm curious how you go about it, because you're obviously an expert in this. Like, you've done it over and over, and I've seen Fizzle.co. I've seen how coherent and cohesive that brand is. Your aesthetic, your voice, and your tone of that site, it matches up so well. So how do you do that? How can, again, there's a software developer listening to this right now, and they're thinking, boy, I don't know that I'm able to do that. So do you have a process? Is it just trial and error? Is it you have to do it for 10 years to get good at it?
Yeah, that's a great question. But like, here's some notes that I have on this. First and foremost, you got to care, right? You got to give a damn. Like, if this is just another software product that you hope you don't have to touch at all throughout the week or month, and that it makes you, you know, a few thousand dollars a month, like things like that, like, good luck. Kind of like you said earlier, Rob, like, there's the sleazy douchebag internet marketing folks who aren't trying to push civilization and humanity forward at all, right? So if you want to make a little product that does a little thing that's one of 10 things in your arsenal that you don't want to have to touch, I find it very hard to try to create. I've worked with a lot of clients like that, and I find it incredibly hard to try to create that. Not to be like you can't make it good, right? That thing is what it is. You know, like Drip, Rob, what you have is what it is. And the role of design is to make that thing the most what it is to everybody who lands on that page who's right for that product. So it's not necessarily just about making the world a better place, but I do, for me, what's always at the like center of what I get into, it's like I care. Like I see Nerd Fitness and he's got, you know, a few million people coming to his site every month, and he's selling products, but it's this crazy Frankenstein of a brand. And I really like Steve, so I say, okay, come out to my house. We're going to spend a week. We're going to redesign your site, because this nerd plus fitness thing, the way that story is kind of crashing together in my head makes so much sense, and that's not at all what I'm seeing on this page. So let's try to make this thing what it actually is. That all came because I had a deep sort of intuition about this thing, and I cared. I really wanted to see that vision come to life. And that's kind of like my answer to everything. Someone wrote a big post recently on personal branding, and they interviewed me, and I was like, I have four steps. First one is care. The second one is look at number one again, and then do that for two and three, or three and four as well. When your personality, when your humanity comes to the surface of any website experience, it's at least interesting. So I always like that. Then what else could we do? For me, there's this sense of story. There's a sense of a story. And my friend Don Miller wrote a book called A Million Miles in 1,000 Years. He's basically asking, what would happen if we looked at our life the way that a director looked at a movie? And that's always stuck with me, because then he gets into, what is a story? A story is this is a simple formula for that. A story is a character who wants something and overcomes obstacles to get it. So I always try to get myself in story mode, but here's the big mistake that all of us founders end up making. It's like, so if the story is of our business is like Star Wars, right? We always think of ourselves as Luke Skywalker, but we're not Luke. The audience is Luke. The person who's using our software is Luke. Okay, they're the ones who have to defeat the Empire. They're the ones who have some crazy DNA and backstory that they didn't have any control or power over, and now they're thrust into this quest. They couldn't have helped it, and now who are we? We're the Yoda, or we're better yet, the Obi-Wan. There's this scene where Obi-Wan gives Luke his dad's lightsaber. I saw that, and I was like, oh my God, this is the movie right here. It is like, that's the kernel of the whole freaking movie. And that's the scene that's sort of what I'm always encouraging founders inside of Fizzle to do, to take that posture of, okay, I need to help Luke with this mission that he's on, because otherwise the whole universe explodes. It's going to be horrible. It affects me when they don't do it. So again, kind of coming back to that care, but seeing them in that story, now there's something at stake. Now it's not just about how do I get them to use email better. Now it's about, these guys have to make money. They have to make money from their thing that they've made. And I need to help them on that journey, right? And so I'm going to help them in this little sliver of it. Just like Obi-Wan just helped with one little sliver, then there was Yoda, and then there was Leia and Han Solo, right? And everybody plays their own roles. So for me, that story, that is always what I get into. And obviously, there's not like tactics in there. I find that I can empathize with the people on the other side more. And that always, that's what design, a lot of people would say design is empathy. So tell me what I've said so far, because I feel like I'm not making any sense over here.
You've said to know your audience and know them well enough that you can hear the internal conversation that's going on inside their head, and that you turn that around and make them the hero of the story, that it's a hero's journey, and that your product is not the hero, it's the user.
Yeah, exactly. And you're sort of the Obi-Wan. Your product is a lightsaber. The user is on this journey. And if you care about that journey for them and realize they need to be successful in that thing for your product to be what it was meant to be the lightsaber that is in the final climactic scenes of that movie. That's the story. But I'm the kind of guy, I just can't help it. Like, I always start there. And from there, normally there's some inspiration that comes from that. There's some sort of idea. There's some little gimmick, some little thing. So for Nerd Fitness, it was the like comic book sort of elements that came to play. For Smart Passive Income, it became just this idea of Pat as like the answer man and as like the crash test dummy for trying a lot of things online. For Think Traffic, it was making a huge, big, bold like statement about what it's like to have a website and make it responsive, because compared to the rest of the internet marketing world, it was all really, really bad. And so to put something out just huge, massive, like 70 pixel font size on the headlines, big, broad, sprawling pages, it really made an impression. You know, all of those things served those stories. And so for Fizzle, our story, this is another thing that I got from Peldy. Saw his business of software talk. He says, you don't fall in love with your solution, fall in love with the problem, and you'll be just fine. And that's kind of, I guess, what I'm getting at here is if you fall in love with the problem, realize what's at stake for the people on the other side who have that problem. It's going to help you with your copywriting. It's going to help you realize that, yeah, you're going to need to put together a design, then you need to test it over time, then you need to see what works best. You need to hear back from your audience. There's no borders between your design and the emails that you send your customers and the feedback that you're getting from them and all this other stuff. It all shapes the direction of this thing so that in 8 months, 12 months, you've got a really, really strong understanding of what's working extremely well for your audience.
I'm glad you brought up Peldy because I think he's a really good example of basically taking what you're saying and he applies that in everything he does, whether it's his app itself, whether it's the marketing, whether it's his presentations or his Twitter background, everything. It's about this, it's design thinking, but it's a creativity and looking at every point of contact with his company or with his brand. He wouldn't call it a brand, but it really is a brand. And you fall in love with Peldy and what he's done with Balsamic because of that creative thinking, and he kind of turns you into the Luke Skywalker.
I have this video that I did on Ice to the Brim, which is just like my little personal blog, where I'm talking about, like, it's called the focus factor. But I talk about how we all do this digging. This is just thinking personally. We do this digging. We're like, oh, maybe I'll be this kind of good guy. Maybe I'll do this for a living. Maybe I'll do that. Maybe I'll be a designer. No, maybe I'll be a copywriter. No, maybe I'll develop a front end. Maybe, no, I'll learn in some, you know, whatever you crazy people get into, Python or boa constrictor or whatever's the coolest thing right now. And we're slowly spiraling around, getting closer and closer and closer to our center to find out kind of who we are and what we're here for. And then when we hit it, that's not like actually our landing pad. That's not the destination. That's the launch pad for what I call like the story arc that explodes off of there. And now everything we do falls on that story arc. So if my story arc within Fizzle is to serve the independent entrepreneur, I've fallen in love with that problem. The problem of the independent entrepreneur, I kind of like the word indie, because we're dealing with this identity crisis of if we're not taking on big money, if we don't have millions of users, then who are we? We're nothing. Because part of the story is people are telling us that. That's not true. All this DIY stuff, all of these problems that are coming at us, not only do I have to know how to code and think about these sorts of things or know how to find coders, but then I got to think about differentiation and I got to think about web design and I got to think about an email strategy and I got to think about all this other stuff. And it's just so overwhelming. So there are things that we work out over the course of, you know, the 7 years that we get started and try these things out. But I've fallen in love with that person who wants to build something and support themselves and earn a living doing something they care about and trying really hard not to burn out on it. You know, that's the problem I've fallen in love with, according to Peldy's advice. So that's the story arc. And so there you can easily spot where, like, the spark line, the Fizzle blog lands. It's the big circle that doesn't have a whole lot of revenue going on. And then one step further is the Fizzle show, which is a much smaller circle, but still pretty big. And then just to the right of that is Fizzle, which is a really small circle, but really high in revenue. And then beyond that, who knows what it'll be next, right? Maybe some sort of small group coaching, maybe some sort of, you know, get 15 people together in Cancun for a 3-day intensive, maybe live event of, you know, 300 people or something like that, right? But everything serves that story of the indie entrepreneur, and they have varying degrees of audience members or, you know, revenue that thing is capable of. And designing that story was the first place I started in developing the Fizzle brand.
Really, what you need to do is you need to figure out, you know, what the story is that you're going to be telling to people. And along with that story, I mean, you have to have at least some kind of an idea of what your audience is. So, you know, how do you go about developing or defining what that, you know, audience looks like? Because, you know, as you said, I mean, your customer is really the hero of your story, and you want to make, you know, your product is basically the lightsaber. You're providing the tool for them, but you want them to be great with it. And you have to figure out who that audience is. And how do you go about doing that? I mean, what's the hard part about defining what that audience looks like and who the ideal person, I guess, in it? I don't want to say customer, because in some cases it's not necessarily a customer, but, you know, who's the ideal person who kind of fits into that audience? How do you define them?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Mike, because that is the hardest thing in the whole world. But there are some tools and tricks of the trades. First of all, you got to realize, do I know this person already or do I not? Half the time, we're all developing for ourselves. You know, we're creating our product to scratch our own itch. And that's a really good place to be if we have a little bit of taste and a little bit of style. And especially if we're the kind of person who thought through this issue a lot, this problem if we know it really well, chances are we'll be able to create a pretty good solution for it. Now, it's a question of whether, I don't know if we'll be able to really market it all that well to other people like me, but your chances are better than if you didn't know anything about those people in some ways. But a lot of the times, you might start thinking that it's to you, and then you end up over time learning more and more and more that you've somehow hit some vein of people that you don't know anything about, but they really love your product and they need these three features that you didn't even think about before. You know, I'm sure you guys have experienced that, right? Where you've built something and then the audience starts kind of pulling it in a different direction.
Yeah, definitely.
Like being able to listen to them over time is a big thing. So the first thing I would say is, number one, give yourself some time. Allow yourself to listen for a little while and be okay with not having the answer. Like you can do sketches. Like weirdly, your mind thinks different things when you're doing different stuff. So you can just make like, let's take a piece of paper, draw like four people's heads and like just their shoulders on it, just a big weird thumb. But then I, you know, would put on the hair, and this one had glasses and he's carrying a messenger bag. And what's inside a messenger bag? He's probably got a moleskin and a Nalgene, right? And then this lady, she was wearing some sort of a blouse. She had a BlackBerry. Why? Because she's enterprise. Weird. I didn't know any enterprise people in my audience. Okay, that's interesting. But and of course, you're just kind of sketching, but it gets you opening up, thinking about who would be in it, and then which one of these would I really like to cater this thing to. That's a really good tip, is just to be able to sketch and draw. Another thing is finding out where the conferences are that someone like this would go to. Just doing the research on what kind of, like for instance, if you're doing research on web designers, there's just a million web design conferences out there, and there's a big difference between like the Event Apart audience and the Future of Web Apps audience, you know, and that's an instructive difference. And you can read through some of their marketing materials. You can look at things on their site and hear testimonials on that they probably have featured on their site. And they're giving you language that clues you into who these people are, what they really are hungry for. You can find forums where folks are like interested in your topic and just get involved. Just start paying attention. Just start listening. Get the email updates. Try answering some questions. Try hearing, getting more clarity about what their struggles really are. These are all things, and again, none of it sounds sexy, right? It just sounds like work. And I would say limit yourself. Give yourself time, but limit yourself, because you can spend the rest of your days researching before you launch this thing. And what's important is you do a good preliminary amount of work, like 2-3 weeks of research and development on who your people are, which is the same thing as saying understanding who your people aren't. And then you launch with that. You go whole hog with that and you try it out for a while. And then you start hearing from people. You do the things that don't scale for a while. You're reaching out to everyone. You're getting really, you know, hopefully, you know, kind of like what you guys have both done with your products, where you're getting all that big feedback from your small crew of early users. That's all big stuff. And then with one last bit on just the language that they use is incredibly important. If they say, I'm really struggling with, or I have a problem with, you know, just the little tweaks on language, if you see any patterns in that, or if you get any sort of clues into that, first of all, the only way you're going to get those clues is if you're really listening, paying attention, like sort of keeping an Evernote list somewhere where you're keeping notes on that stuff. But the language that they use matters a ton. Even if you don't use the same exact language on your sales page, using things that are like it, using things that feel like you, that they're going to interpret as the thing that they mean when they say, I struggle with X or Y or Z, that ends up being a really big deal.
There was a lot good in there. The piece that I want to touch on is the language point. I'm not sure if you haven't launched a product that you really understand how different it is to call your product, say, let's take Drip, for example. That's email marketing software that I launched. I could have a headline that says Epic Autoresponders. I could also have a headline that says More Leads and More Customers. I could have a headline that says Easy Lead Generation. I could have one that says Emails That Convert, Double Digit Jump in Your Conversion Rate. I've used all of these. The reason I know these is because they're in front of me, because I have like 19 different headlines that I've tested and that I've talked to people about. And the interesting thing is with where Drip is right now, it's still early, but I can already see the different groups using it in a different way and referring to it as different things. And so that is a challenge, because all of my customers are not calling it the same thing. They're calling it different things, but it's, as you said, you try to look for trends. You try to slice it and figure out if they're a SaaS or a software company. Are they saying a certain thing? Are they talking about leads or conversion rate or ROI?
Yeah.
If they're more of the email marketer, are they talking about how good the tool is itself and not talking about the results, blah, blah, blah. And so that's, to be honest, the phase that I'm in right now. I did it with Hittail. I've done it, we've done it with MicroConf. We've changed the messaging there. I mean, kind of every product that you go through, I think at a certain point, once you do understand that audience and you're able to have a dialogue with them, you wind up honing that message.
Yeah, absolutely. There's this great quote from Victor Papanek, one of these old school designers, and he says, "Design as a problem-solving activity can never, by definition, yield the one right answer. It will always produce an infinite number of answers, some righter and some wronger," right? So just like with headline, I mean, we've done a massive amount of headline tests, right? There's normally mostly a winner. Sometimes you get a really clear winner. And sometimes it's like, yeah, this is incrementally better. Let's just stick with that. But still, even there, like, who's to say you're not going to come up with something more right than this current winner? This sort of, this organic development over time. And that's why it's helpful that it's not like just some little thing that you hope to sort of like fart out and just never have to deal with again, because these things end up, these ideas develop over time, you know? So I guess I'm sort of predisposed. I dream about making a brand and making something that stands right next to a MailChimp and a Squarespace in terms of, look at this, it's from the internet, it's for the internet. It stands for something good. It says, let's make a better internet together, the way that Squarespace is saying that. I've got a background in advertising, and that has always been the most interesting thing about advertising to me, is that you have so much money to do something meaningful and everybody's f***ing it up. They're not doing it in an interesting way when they could. And so you should take everything that I say with a grain of salt. That, like, that's always what I'm hungry for. I'm always hungry for some speck of the sense that maybe we're not alone or as lonely as we all feel like we are. It's certainly in my DNA to build a brand more like Fizzle. Like, hey, let's do something matterful and meaningful together. Let's create something of our lives. Let's, you know, harness what we know of independent business, of the internet, of connection with other people, of, you know, needs and desires and all these things. And let's earn a living independently doing something that we care about versus just making money.
Right. And I'm interested, you said that advertisers, they have so much money and most of them are doing it wrong. They're not doing it in a meaningful way. What does it look like to do it in a meaningful way? Like, what's an example, or what is a way to describe how you've envisioned that?
I mean, there's a lot of examples of people doing it really well. I mean, do you remember the Chrysler commercials that featured Eminem? Like, one of them actually had Eminem in it, and the other ones just had like that song, like that building sort of driving song. What they did was they told the story of the rebirth of Detroit and American Motors. They reframed the story of Chrysler as the story of Detroit, as the story of America as the underdog. And they did it all with this like driving, moving Eminem song underneath it. And then they told a bunch of little stories. Like, one of them was a Portland, some NFL player or something. And it was like his homecoming, coming back to Portland, like driving through the streets, gray, foggy, cloudy outside. And he's driving through Portland. And it's just some really mellow, kind of deep, meaningful monologue that he's having. They told these stories of the underdog and they made the brand represent that. Like, that's sensational. I loved that. And then here's this other example that I found recently. There's an advertiser called Howard Gossage. He was an old advertiser in the 50s and 60s. And it was said of Howard Gossage that he was, I can't remember exact words, but the most well-worded renegade of the advertising milieu. But I'm just looking at this ad right now in this book that I have of Howard Gossage. There was a stereo company called KLH, and he made this just the silly ad. All of his ads were funny. They were like conceptual art. And this is what it says. A recent survey sponsored by KLH has proven beyond doubt that when you buy KLH stereo equipment, you will love your wife or husband more. And then he says, admittedly, it's like a lot of copy on this ad, by the way. He only did ads in The New Yorker. He said they did a survey where they asked respondents to assume that he was for some reason deprived of his wife or husband, and to assume that dollars could somehow prevent that catastrophe. How many dollars would it be worth to keep your wife or husband? Well, gentlemen, the findings showed that owners of KLH equipment said on average they'd spend $541,616.23, whereas owners of other equipment said a mere $362,000. The difference is $179,064 worth of favor for the average KLH spouse. And it's just a silly idea of saying, like, he made up some stats that are just outlandish and crazy and said, this stereo company is going to make you love your wife more. But it's cheeky, it's funny, it's interesting. It's, I think more than anything else, it's human. That's what I feel like advertisers are telling us, that like, look at you, you're the crazy guy who loves Taco Bell at midnight. You're crazy. We love that about you. Come get a burrito wrapped in a taco with a thick candy shell or whatever.
So that's what you're saying. You're saying there's an element of humanity. That word human has come up several times.
Yeah.
When you've been talking. And it also sounds like there's an element of humor. There's an element of creativity and cleverness that goes outside of the way everyone else is doing it.
Yeah. And that's classic good copywriting. But there's just so much room to actually make someone fall in love with who you, with your brand, with your product, with what your product represents. MailChimp or like Squarespace, right? Their Super Bowl ad for like, here's to like, let's make a better web together. But it's something like that. Great ad. Really good advertisement. Really good story. At least for us internet people. It's a great story to sort of to get behind. That's what I've always been addicted to. I've always wanted to create that experience when someone lands on one of my websites or something that I've designed for someone else, but especially when they land on Fizzle, when they watch the video and they see the little joke. Like, it's very intentional that we have that little gimmick in the video about 15 seconds into it, because that's right around when you're probably going to click away. But those kind of little human bits, I find that if I landed on Drip, Rob, and it was cheeky, and it said, listen, of course you have an email problem. Just look at your fingernails. Or so, I don't know. That's not a good example, but something like that, where then you drew me into the story of like, where it's like people who use Drip love their wives more. Mm-hmm. Where I see that you've got humor, you're interesting. And that's, I got to be clear, that's not always right. Probably rarely right. But that's the kind of experience that I want to have. So I want to give the user, the visitor, that kind of experience with the stuff, which is why, you know, in the training and the courses that we make, there's always jokes. There's always little one-liners and little sort of things that we pull in with the learning to kind of keep it interesting, because this stuff can be tough to learn. We like to really accentuate the humanity.
I think that makes a lot of sense, but, and I don't know where the line here is. It would seem to me that when you're doing advertising and promotion for your product, that you could overdo it. And I don't know where you would draw the line. I mean, obviously, I think it depends on, you know, exactly what you're doing. And kind of what are your thoughts on that? Because it seems like you can only tell the same story so many times or so many different ways before you get to the point where you're no longer eliciting a positive reaction from people. It can turn negative.
Absolutely. And it's a really good point, Mike, because first and foremost, I just need a corkscrew, right? I think a lot of people who listen to this show, a lot of bootstrappers, we're trying to build a great corkscrew, something that's useful. It does what it's supposed to do, like the email drip, like these sorts of things, right? We want to create a corkscrew, and I'm fully willing to pay, you know, $10, $15, $30, $90 a month for a corkscrew if it really opens the bottle of wine the way that I need it to. And so at the same time, you're absolutely right about that. There needs to be a balance, because when I buy a corkscrew, I don't want to hear some cute, long, whimsical tale. It'd be nice if there's five corkscrews on the wall. I know they're all going to do the job, but one of them, you know, is shaped like a peepee or something like that. And I'm like, oh, look at these guys. But then they have another one that I would actually want to put my hands on. But you're absolutely right, because if you land on something and it's too cheeky, it's too, you know, cute, like I said, whimsical almost, then I'm losing interest because you don't understand my problem. But if you can understand my problem, tell me about it in a way that makes me go, not only like, oh yeah, he gets my problem, but he does it in a way that feels right, that feels human. That also was actually surprisingly interesting. Like there was a one-liner in there somewhere, or there was some little vignette or some interesting story or whatever. And again, it's not always going to be humor. It could be like the Chrysler ad, where it's actually meaningful, it's motivational, it connects it to my bigger motivation, which is not to solve my email problem, it's to have a life that I care more about, that I feel more at home in, that's more authentically me. Sometimes it's just connecting it up that level of why or down that level of why, depending on how you look at it. And that in and of itself also needs to be done tastefully. So it you're right in that these things can be way out of whack and off balance.
Well, Chase, it's been awesome having you on the show, man. I'm wondering, you know, folks want to get in touch with you, follow what you're doing, how would they do that?
If you don't care about who you follow, if you have low standards for Twitter, I'm on there at Chase_Reeves. But probably the best place is the Sparkline blog, fizzle.co/sparkline. You'll be able to find it there. We work pretty hard to keep the quality of stuff that we're putting out there quite high. And I think it's pretty good stuff that your audience would probably like.
Awesome. Thanks again for taking the time, man. Really appreciate you coming on the show. And I think our listeners would, you know, get quite a bit out of this episode.
All right, man. Well, thanks. I'm glad to be here. I hope there's something intelligible in there. I kind of feel like I just kind of ranted and raved, but that's no new sensation for me.
Very cool, dude.
Thanks, Chase.
Thank you, guys.
If you have a question for us, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690 or email it to us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups or by RSS at startupsfortherestofus.com, where you'll also find a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.